Valley with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It is good to be back. Episode 7, Season 6 at the last count, I think it is. I hope you've enjoyed us so far. I hope you've caught up with some of the older ones as well, some great ones. Martin Holmes, obviously, I think that's possibly the most downloaded one we've had so far in this season, and we've got some nice comments about that, and a few other things. Obviously, we had the lovely Molly Taylor on last week. That sped on a few things. Some of the things that started with some of the pictures, iconic images as well, that's still ongoing. We've still had some bits and pieces on that, and we'll catch up on that one a little bit later on as well, because we're still getting tweets on that at the moment, so we will come back to that one. But at the top of the show, you know how it all works now. If you don't, I'll lead you by the hand very, very gently. At this point, I introduce my co-hosts at the top of the programme. And on my left, as always, is the bouffant head, Jack Bennion from Motorsport News. Hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, and happy birthday, Tony Simpson.
It was yesterday now, Jack, but I'm touched. Thank you.
No one will know that when the podcast comes out, though, will they? They don't know what day we're recording.
That's very true. So, no, I'm genuinely touched, and I don't mean any Jimmy Savile way. Thank you for that. That's quite sweet of you. It was wonderful. I had a wonderful birthday. I spent it in Hertfordshire in a travel lodge. I felt like Alan Partridge. I felt like I'd finally arrived in life. But still, there you go. A man who never stays in a travel lodge, obviously not. A man who obviously takes a butler everywhere with him, obviously, goes without saying. And a man who travels, he's our Stig, he's our James Bond, he's our salt to our pepper. He is everything to this programme that I'm not, i.e. knowledgeable and can drive. Ryan Champion, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm all right. I'd say it's been a bit of a frantic one. I feel a bit settled now. I'm back in our little studio, and I feel confident and good that we're going to be doing a nice podcast for nearly. We're building up to Christmas, aren't we? We're building up to Christmas, and you can kind of get that feeling because there's tinsel everywhere, and we're still talking about Sebastian Ogier not making a decision on where his future is going to lie. So that's where we're going to start, because it would be odd not to start there. Jack, obviously it's still a big story in the paper this week. Obviously, there's pictures of the test, which I think we all knew about. I flippantly put something on social media the other week about a bit like transfer deadline day, and it was kind of like seeing Sebastian Ogier just getting off a plane here or this or that. I had an inkling, and I can't say where from, I had an inkling he was going to be in South Wales, which is why I put a flippant kind of comments out on social media about him going in Greg's the Bakers, just to make it a bit jokey. But you guys, I've got the full story. You've got the pictures in there. Tell our listeners, I suppose, if they've not seen the images, I'd be very, very shocked. But just tell us what you guys gleaned from that and where the story came from.
Yeah, we've just done a bit more of an in-depth analysis piece on the test and how Sebastian got on, really. And we've looked a little bit to Malcolm to sort of guide us as to where the deals are up to, where everything is. Obviously, a few rumours that he might be signed on Friday this week, but we're told that that's not true, and that, you know, and negotiations are going to continue next week, basically. So our piece in the paper this week is just a bit about the test. A couple of details, like Sebastian picked up the car after it had run with Oit Tanak the day before, and went out, did a bit of setup work with the car, got it to where he wanted it, wanted to test a few different aspects of the car that maybe he didn't know so much about, and compare it to the VW, obviously. So he seemed happy with the test, and Malcolm was very impressed with how the two champions sort of approached the test and the professionalism that they showed. So all in all, quite an interesting day, I think.
Right. Worst case scenario, Malcolm doesn't get his man. It's still a cracking day to have a four-time world champion in your car for feedback, isn't it?
It is, but I think to come this close and not sign Sebastian Ogier would just be like a, I don't know, an open goal in the World Cup final. They couldn't be any closer to getting him, and you know, it would be fantastic for them just to complete this deal. We saw obviously the images of Ogier testing the Ford, some video footage as well. There was also quite a lot of video footage kicking around of Ogier testing the Toyota Yaris, and I mean, we've seen a lot of footage of the Yaris testing, and the test conditions for Ogier in that car seem to be quite slippery, quite greasy. But the car just didn't seem to work that well. It really didn't seem to be handling that well, and I certainly don't think he can have jumped out of the Yaris anything like as excited as he hopefully did out of the Fiesta. So, you know, it's a decision's going to have to be made very soon. We know that Toyota are really going to throw a lot of money behind any deal to get Ogier in a Yaris, but my gut feeling is I think he'll go to M Sport, so let's just hope it happens.
Jack, I'll bring you back at this point. That, you know, there was rumours, I don't know whether it was Autosport or somewhere else where I picked this one up, but you know, I think €8 million for a year's work if he goes to Toyota, that's a big ask, isn't it, for M Sport?
Yeah, well, apparently straight after Ogier finished testing, Tommy was on the plane and out to try and sanction a deal in Japan to get Ogier in. I think the fee was €10 million, wasn't it, which has worked out about £8.4 million. So you're about right there, I think, Tony. But you know, looking at the video, just like what Ryan said there, really, the car just didn't seem to be working very well, and whether they were working with some setup work to try and make the car as difficult to drive as possible in order to try and test it that way, I don't know. That would seem unlikely to me. So the car didn't look great, but then the Fiesta has looked good in the tarmac test, but I haven't seen too much video of the Fiesta testing on gravel, so it's interesting to see sort of what we really want now is Ogier's thoughts, isn't it, really, because he's obviously driven the VW and now the Fiesta and the Toyota as well. So that's what we want next, that's what we need next, his thoughts on all the cars.
Do you know what? I completely agree with you guys, but there was something about that Toyota test that just, inverted commas test, whatever you want to call it, something just didn't quite ring to. There was bits where it was kind of very poke and squirt and aiming, but you know, it was, I'm not so sure it was what it was perhaps perceived to be. I'm really not. There's something didn't quite seem quite right about it, and I'm not just talking about handling and stuff like that, but it was very point and squirt in places and stuff like that. I just don't know. I don't believe perhaps that's what we've been led to believe it was.
Are you insinuating that Ogier wasn't in the car, Tony?
Kinda. I don't know.
But even if it, you know, if it had been it doesn't matter whether it was Lappi or Hanninen or Sunninen or, you know, the car just didn't work. The car was looking like a very difficult thing to drive, and more so than I've actually seen that from the Toyota. I mean, we've all seen a lot of testing footage of next year's cars, and it just looked a handful. You know, it had a lot of drive from the front. It didn't seem to be driving enough from the rear. Whoever was driving it, the car just didn't seem to be working that well, and I think that'll be a big key to to Ogier's move for next year, because yes, obviously he'll be financially driven to a point, but we know his salary is already there from Volkswagen. We know in theory he can take the Red Bull money with him as well. I don't think this is going to come down to money or solely money. I think this is going to come down to which car he wants to drive, which he thinks is going to give him the best chance to win next year's World Championship, and that isn't the Toyota.
I still think that, you know what, maybe I'm just looking for a story. Maybe it's just very, very straightforward. And don't get me wrong, I keep reiterating this point. I really hope it is M Sport. I really, 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 really do. More than possibly I can express in this hour and 20 minutes-ish podcast. But I can't help but feel there's a sting in the tail somewhere in all this. And I hope I'm wrong. I guess this time next week we'll know. He says, hopefully.
Or the week after.
I'll tell you what, I did have to giggle. Of course, the famous and the lovely Bex Williams did put out something, a bit of a hashtag Seb Watch, which I thought was brilliant, by the way. I know Bex listened to it. But I love that. I love that. If anybody's got any sightings of him.
I think we will get something next week, because, you know, we are, you know, may sound a bit strange to the listeners if we say we're very close to Monte Carlo now, but in terms of getting everything sorted, getting deals sorted, getting tests done and things like that, you know, we are pushing, we're up, you know, very close to December now. So, you know, movement is going to have to happen very, very quickly in the next couple of weeks in terms of where the drivers are going.
Yeah, I think so. And I suppose we keep coming back to this, and I do feel like a little bit of a broken record talking about this subject, to be honest. But, you know, we've still got the knock-on effect for Andreas and for Yerry Matti, of course. So there's three souls that are kind of wandering around a little bit at the moment, and I guess with nothing kind of confirmed. I'll tell you what was interesting as well, fellas, and I don't know whether we can read too much into this, but The M Sport test, obviously there was reference to the fact that Tanak was driving the car and Seb took his setup and everything else, but Mads Osberg was driving that car as well, I'm led to believe. I think I picked up on somewhere. Now, we keep we keep thinking that Mads isn't going to be in an M Sport car, but he's still around.
I think there's a good chance he'll be in an M Sport car, don't you? I think there's a very good chance he will be driving an M Sport Fiesta. He just maybe won't be liveried as one of the works cars, as it were. But I'd be surprised if he wasn't in an M Sport Fiesta, honestly.
So do you think that's again we're back to the realms of a fantasy WRC manager a little bit here. There's going to be three cars for the teams next year, which we've discussed last week. We talked about the depth and everything that high end I have. Are we going to have three M Sport cars and a DMAC car? Is that how we see things here?
I think there'll be at least that. No, I think we'll see more M Sport cars, honestly.
More 2017.
Yeah, I think Osberg will drive one, but you know, as far as we know, Camilli is a done deal. Tanak's looking highly likely. If Ogier's there as well, I think we'll see Osberg in an adapter car. It still obviously has to be run by M Sport. It'll still be an M Sport car, but it'll be run under the adapter banner, I think.
So where do you see the 3 point scorers then for the M Sport team?
I think it'll be Camilli, it'll be Tanak, and it'll be Ogier.
Interesting. How about you, Jack?
I'd have to agree with that. I think that's the most likely three drivers for them.
Well, Seb, watch. Maybe we need to set something up for Andreas and for Jari Matti, but we're watching, and people are still guessing. Anyway, there you go.
Yeah, I guess, but just on those two, just coming in now, I guess it is hard for them because they're just playing a waiting game. And I bet until Ogier actually makes a decision and signs a piece of paper, the other two are struggling to put anything together because, you know, Ogier is the hottest property in the world, isn't he? So until his jigsaw piece is fitted into place, the other two will still be struggling.
Anyway, moving on. Listen, a bit of a bugbear of Seb's, as he's mentioned throughout the year, quite rightly, in many people's eyes. Not so in Hayden's. The FIA is to publish calendar and tweak running order regulations, Jack.
Yeah, this should be good news. I think today is the World Motorsport Council meeting. Yarmo's talked about quite a few things this week actually with us. One of them being that VW is kind of that he's upset that VW are leaving, but he doesn't think it's too bad. He thinks that, you know, the WRC teams can learn a lesson from how Volkswagen sort of presented themselves in the championship and things like that. So that's good. And then the running order we've talked about the last few weeks, haven't we? And the calendar is set to be, the calendar will be exactly the same as how it finished this year, if you like. So no China and no Turkey.
Now, I don't think there's any shocks there, right? I think, you know, we spoke long and hard about when China was canned at the time. Obviously, certainly from our point of view, we spoke about it. I had some involvement with regards to getting bits and pieces over to China, and it was a nightmare what happened, you know, for all concerned. No one's prepared really to risk sending kit, especially the way things are tight these days, are they? You know, you can't afford to lose half your kit and then arrive at an event. That's not going to happen.
You definitely can't. No, you're right. It's a very expensive business, as you well know, in terms of shipping the cars and moving them around the world. And not only that, you know, this is a world championship. This is the highest level there is, and it looks very amateurish if an event doesn't happen. And you know, it simply can't happen at this level. We know that the manufacturers are desperate to go to China. We know, therefore, that the promoter was desperate to go to China. But unfortunately, it probably was all just rushed through a little bit quickly. And the event simply didn't happen. And as much as they want to go to China as soon as possible, they can't afford for that to happen again.
Now, again, I might have dreamt this. Were Volkswagen perhaps one of the front-running teams to push for China, boys? Have I got that wrong? Am I inventing something there in my head?
I think all the manufacturers wanted to go to China, don't they? It's a no-brainer. I think, you know, Volkswagen were pushing equally with Hyundai, and I think Citroën was probably the most militant when it came to trying to push through China, weren't they? But you know, you got to go where manufacturers are selling cars, and China's obviously one of the quickest expanding markets and one of the biggest car markets in the world. So yeah, I think all the manufacturers were pushing pretty hard to go there, and they'll probably be not too happy at this result. But you know, the it's a trade-off, isn't it? WRC has got to get a good rally that's guaranteed to go ahead, and that is going to be run to a level that they find acceptable.
Now, one thing that also is funny enough on the same page as this, Jack, is Polo's to find new home in privateer FIA WRC Trophy. This is yet to gather pace, but by all accounts, there is some enthusiasm all of a sudden due to the fact that these Polos are available.
Yeah, I think, you know, this cup's been forgotten about a bit, hasn't it? And now it's sort of come back into the limelight just because people just really want to drive a VW, it seems, doesn't it? Even if it's a 2016 version. And, you know, we've run the story this week that, you know, we've spoken to Sven Smeets and he seems to think that, you know, the Polos could find a home in the Privateer Championship. So, you know, maybe this all filters down from how the driver market works out. So, you know, if Ogier, Latvala and Mikkelsen all take seats of a couple of younger drivers, maybe the manufacturers will be interested in putting their younger drivers who've missed out on a seat because of those three becoming available to get into this 2017 Cup and mix it with some of the drivers who've been around a bit longer and probably won't drive a 2017 car. So it'll be interesting to see how this sort of team's cup gathers pace now.
Very logical, Jack. Rye, if I can just bring you in at this point, where does that leave WRC2?
It could muddy the waters somewhat, couldn't it? The more support championships we have, then the less any one of those particular support championships makes the headlines, I guess. You know, obviously, running a 2016 World Rally car would be significantly more expensive than running an R5 car. So I'm not sure. I think WRC2 has definitely got its place because I think, like I said, running a World Rally car, regardless of if it's 2016 or 2017, is a much bigger budget than an R5 car. So I think, you know, really the second division should remain as the R5 cars, as WRC2. But, you know, inherently, like we said, some people want to drive a Volkswagen. I mean, let's not forget, people can't go and theoretically buy their way into a 2017 car. So they want the best of the 2016 cars. And that's obviously the Polo. And I've already heard rumours of a couple of Irish customers as well that are desperate to try and get out in a Polo, be the first one to take a Polo to Ireland. So I'm sure we're going to see these cars out on rallies and not just in the WRC.
As you say, muddy the waters is a very, very good way of putting it. But I don't know. I understand, you know, from the team's point of view, obviously they want to rent cars out and stuff like that. Are we just necessarily trying to find a home for them? Is there a requirement for the 2016 cars to run? Do they really need to run, boys?
No, probably not. No, you're probably right. It's finding a home for them so that the teams can continue to bring in some revenue for them. But in terms of a class structure that keeps things very simple, then we don't need them.
I don't think it's an issue for the reason that this year we've seen people who are very talented young drivers like Ezepeka Lappi and Elvin Evans beating people in WRC cars. So are we going to see the level of field in a 2016 car next year that is going to be similar to this year? No, we're most likely not. You know, the cup is aimed at some of the drivers who aren't going to step up to a 2017 car next year. And, you know, with the greatest respect, probably aren't front runners on rallies. So I think the WRC2 guys who are at the front and are on the pace are still going to beat these 2016 cars anyway. So from a point of view as a young driver, I don't think the 2016 cars in a cup provides any sort of issue to proving yourself, really.
Having said that, it would be better preparation as a driver to be driving a WRC car, regardless of the fact it's a, you know, an older spec car, than it would be driving an R5 car. But like I said, it comes back to budgets. I don't think we're going to see a lot of people signing up to drive the WRC cars in a second tier, if you like, because they are so expensive to run. And WRC2 has proved from just how competitive it's been that it is finding a solid grounding and that second division championship's thriving. And I think the old WRC cars will just be too expensive to see too many people competing, you know, year long in those cars.
They'll be too expensive. expensive, and also, I mean, they're not going to get that close to the 2017 cars. The 2017 cars are going to be a different league,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And driving a 2016 car as a young driver isn't going to prove anything for you. So, you know, doing something in an R5 and beating a few 2016 WRC cars will probably do more for your reputation than it would sort of not getting anywhere near a 2017 car and no one really knowing how good you are.
Do you think there'll be any? Do you think that winning the FIA WRC trophy will carry any weight?
It's always nice to win an FIA title, isn't it? It's always something that drivers go after. But that would solely depend on who's in the cup and how strong it is, wouldn't it? Really, you know that. You know, it's all, winning championships is all about the competition that you beat, isn't it? Really, in terms of the value that they add to your career.
And the other thing is, this is what I was saying about it muddying the waters. WRC2 is called WRC2 for a reason. It's meant to be the second division championship. So, yeah. You know, that's the reason we had WRC2, we had WRC3. So now what have you got? WRC1.5.
BBC4.
BBC4. Exactly. There's a lot to be said for BBC4. There's a hell of a lot to be said for BBC4.
At least you know where BBC4 fits, because it comes behind 1, 2 and 3. But if you've got the WRC FIA year-old car division 1.5 cup thing, where does it fit in the hierarchy?
I kind of feel like we're getting somewhere close to having a very clear format for people to watch rallying and understand it. This country, we is a completely different kettle of fish again. I think there's far too many class structures in the UK at times. I look at it and it throws me. As a WRC level, excuse me, we kind of got to the point where WRC, WRC 2, WRC 3, we kind of know where we're at. And now we bowl this in. And that's where I'm like, no, please don't do this. We've kind of got everything tidied up now. We don't need to, you know, go anywhere with this. It's very, very easy with the way it is at the moment. And I don't know. I understand why it needs to happen, because, you know, people want to drive WRC cars. I just question whether doing WRC events in them is perhaps the best way to go for the championship moving forward. But anyway, folks, by all means, put me straight on this one. Absolute_rally on Twitter, facebook.com/absoluterally. Love to hear your thoughts on that one. Now moving on, from WRC, and a couple of things I just wanted to tip our hats to. Friend of the show, who was going to be on with us this week, but he is the hardest man in the world to get hold of. We're just moving back to kind of domestic and Irish rallying. Jack, McCormack gets R5.
Yeah, we've got Marty McCormack in a proper R5 car this year, which I'm very, very excited about, I've got to say. Love watching Marty when he was in the historic championship in the Mark II Escorts, you know, very flamboyant in the Escorts and good to watch. And now he's got himself a Fabia R5, competed in an S2000 Fabia, and it's really shown on the events that the car's just not quite up to it. And, you know, I've actually had to submit my 12 moments of the year for the BRC website today, and one of them was Marty's performance on the Circuit of Ireland, because you know, his fuel pump went, but he was leading the event in terms of the BRC drivers, and you know, in an S2000 car, which I thought was absolutely spectacular. I thought his performance there was fantastic. Can he be as good as who we get back next year on gravel? I think he probably can. You know, I really think he's a championship contender next year, and I'm really excited to see how he gets on.
I do. I'll be honest. I'm not just saying it. Marty is a mate of mine. But as you say, when he did the historic rally and everything, he's always been quick. In everything he's driven, he's always been quick. Have you ever sat with him, Ryan? Have you ever done any work with him?
No.
When you actually. I'll be honest with you, right, I always have a giggle with Marty, it has to be said. I think he's the person that I tried to interview him once for a TV program I was making, and it took 14 takes, but once you actually get past the giddiness and having a giggle with him, he is so knowledgeable. And the amount of work he did with Citroen Racing with the DS3 when that first came through, he was supported by Santaloc and did BRC and various Irish tarmac stuff and everything else, and also the French Championship as well. Just got so much knowledge, and it is wasted. I think a man that deserves a lot more seat time. But there you go.
This is Absolute Rally Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we
can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904-766-787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Do you know what? I fluffed the start of the show today. Now, normally I just do it in one hit because I'm a total professional and I can just go bang. I'm alive. You know, that's I'm used to live performance. That's what I'm all about. I fluffed one today and Ryan Champion sat back in his big leather chair in his study, stroking his pussy cat like some kind of Dr. Evil. Decide to just drop me in it. Cheers, Ryan Champion. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Right, I want to doff our caps to a couple of other bits and pieces as well. Dom Adams, who was going to be on the show, he will be on the show at some point, not too distant future. Again, probably a name you don't recognise. I've known Dom for a long time. He's been coming up through junior rallying and stuff like that. He's been a teammate man of a couple of teams as well. Made his international, if you like, debut. Certainly from outside of Europe anyway. He was over in Canada on the Tall Pines rally. We're going to talk to Anton Lesage a little bit later on about Tall Pines. He was, of course, the winner of it, but Dom got a class winning result there. Jack, young man who looks like he's going to be looks like he's going to have a busy calendar moving forward.
Absolutely, yeah. I spoke to him before he went out to the Tall Pines, and you know, he's a lad who's, you know, very very good to talk to. Clearly knows you know, exactly kind of what he wants and where he wants to go. Very ambitious, and anyone you speak to who he's sat with is very positive of his abilities and stuff like that as a young co-driver. So it'd be interesting to see how Dom gets on. I know he wants to go and try and do some more events abroad next year as well as doing some other stuff, but you know, it'd be really interesting to see how he moves forward.
Yeah, good man. Right, I just want to draw your attention to a little piece which is appeared in Jack's paper this week, MN, of course, with regards to the Tut Hills. Of course, you're very close to the Tut Hills. You do various bits and pieces with them, but Tut Hills have kind of gone back to the future almost with this one. They've prepared a Beetle.
Yes, they have, and this has been a real pet project of Francis Tuttle, of Richard's father. Obviously, we spoke to Richard on the show a couple of times, and many people know him from running the RGT project for Francois Delacour. But obviously, the main part of their business is preparing historic 911s. That business in itself came from them starting off with Beetles, and Fran rallied a Beetle. Richard actually did the RAC rally in a Beetle, one of the last rallies it was homologated for, I think, when he first started, like back in 1993 or something. And Francis has really had the idea in his head that he wanted to build a modern interpretation of a Beetle for long distance rallies again. It's probably no secret that building either a Mark II Escort or 911 or a Datsun 260Z, whatever it might be, for something like the Safari Rally is a costly process now. And Francis wants to get these prices back to a realistic level. And he thinks the Beetle can be a very strong, reliable car for long distance rallying. So he's built one to the Salzburg spec, which was a famous spec of Beetle in the 70s, and he's doing a 1,000-kilometer rally in the Rift Valley in Kenya with it to debut the car.
Wow, fair play. Boys, we've got to that point where we get to any other business. Now, Jack Benyon, my bouffanted haired friend, have you got your any other business for this week?
I have.
You seem quite confident in this. Is it a good any other business?
No. Probably not, no.
Oh,
but
Jack.
Yeah.
Ryan,
go on. No, you're okay.
Go on, Jack. Go on.
No. You go to Ryan.
All right, I'll go to Ryan. Ryan, have you got your any other business?
I have got my any other business
this
week.
You sound quite happy about it. You sound strong.
Well, I just think it's one of those good news stories for our sport of rallying, not directly relating to European motorsport, in fact not relating to European motorsport at all, going to New Zealand, and that is the announcement of the Paddon Rally Foundation. And I think it's a brilliant story. Hayden Paddon is, as we know, a real key to New Zealand rallying, really pushing hard to get Rally New Zealand back in WRC. But not only that, he's now supporting club level motorsport, and he's launched a foundation to help drivers develop. And it isn't just already competing successful drivers that he's looking to further their careers. He's looking to help novices, and he's also in the future looking to help car clubs as well in New Zealand. And I just think it's a brilliant initiative. And you know, it isn't just about guidance or training programs or whatever. He's actually putting money behind people and clubs, and you know, I think it's you know, a real breath of fresh air. We don't see much of this worldwide, and to see a current WRC superstar helping develop the sport in his home country, I think it's fantastic to see.
Very well said, very well. We'll have to get Hayden on. He is a friend of the show, not had him on for a while. Maybe get Hayden on to have a little chat with us about that, to be honest with you. But no, well done, Hayden, great job. Jack Bengen, is your any other business as strong as that?
No, it's not. And can you go first? Because I've just a little link has broken on my laptop in front of me, and I kind of need it for this bit. So okay. If you can go first, that'd be brilliant.
Just going back to kind of we've just been making reference, of course, the historic rally, and it ties in quite nicely. New Zealand, the Silver Fern Rally is still going on at the moment, and yeah, I'm doing it. Yeah. Sit down, Jack Bengen. I'm doing the Silver Fern. Silver Fern Rally, again, it's an event which I've been involved with many years ago, and some friends of mine have gone over and done it. And yeah, it's still ongoing at the moment. We're currently on, I think it's on day three it is at the moment. It runs through to the 4th of December at the moment. As we look at this, a couple of British crews that we recognize, Matthew Robinson and Sam Collis, who are out in that gorgeous Fiat 131, and the Super Mirror Fury, which again, a strange historic car to use, but, Brian and Ann Stokes, New Zealanders, who are currently leading the rally at this point. And again, friend of the show, man who was behind Rally for Wales and everything else, he talks about the stages over there as the most mind-blowing and gorgeous stages he has ever been on in his life. And it's a lifelong ambition for him to go back and compete on that particular rally. I know that. But just as a bit of a case in point, there's a guy who I've encountered on various bits and pieces that I've done, a guy called Vince Bristow, who's over there with a stunning Mark II Escort RS 1800. And Vince, folks, if you're unsure, he has this gorgeous Mark II Escort, but he's got a 3 Series BMW that he competes in BTRDA national rallies in the UK here. And he also competes in British Rallycross and BTRDA Rallycross in it. And all he does, he just tapes up the lights when he turns up and goes rallycrossing in it, which is just amazing. He's got this battered 3 Series, and he is competing practically every other weekend on some form of event or other in this battered 3 Series. And the reason why he's got this battered 3 Series is so he can have this gorgeous RS 1800 doing these classic events and these adventure events. And funny enough, I feel like I can come to Ryan with this one, because I think there's a lot more people looking at this type of thing, isn't there, right? I think there's a certain generation now. Okay, Vince, the likes of Vince and stuff, is a little bit older than you and I, but I think once you've kind of got certain things out your system, you've done the safari, obviously you were working doing the safari and stuff like that. Once you've got British Championship and BTRDA or whatever it may be out your system, you kind of want to look for adventures, don't you?
Yeah, well, I think it comes back to what rallying used to be, and rallying used to be more of a challenge, didn't it? We bang on about it week after week with WRC, but you know, rallies used to be a challenge. They used to be long. They used to travel countries. You used to have different areas of a country involved, and slowly we've lost that. You know, for various reasons, cost mainly. You know, forestry mileage has been so expensive now, or cost of hosting an event, regardless of the country, and. You know, now you do a BTRDA event, great rallies, strongly supported, but ultimately you're doing 40 miles and you do it in half a day. You're exactly right. You know, people, competitors are looking for something that lasts a bit longer, something that you get into, something that actually, if you have a problem, it's worth fixing the car and carrying on. If you go off, you get the car back on and you carry on. And, you know, Safari, for example, last year, we lost an hour and a half when the distributor filled and we still finished in the top 10. Now, if you lost an hour and a half on a BTRDA event, funnily enough, you wouldn't carry on, would you?
No.
And it's that kind of thing. I think people love the adventure side of it, the challenge. It takes you to places you'd never normally go. You drive some of the most amazing roads that again you wouldn't normally see, and I think we're seeing some people maybe forgoing doing a championship in order to do maybe one or two of these events a year.
Absolutely. As I say, go on the website, folks, silverfernrally.co.nz, and there's some footage up there and you can stay up to date and everything else. fantastic rally, great organising team behind it as well. And as I say, that was my only other business, and it sounded like it possibly could have been Jack's. So Jack, what's your only other business this week?
You've not mentioned any of the historic results there, Tony, so maybe I can add those in.
Are you trying to use my any other business as your own?
No, I'm gonna do something else. But just quickly, I will say that Mary Evans and Yestin Williams are leading the historic element of the rally, and Matthew Robinson and Sam Collis are third in their Fiat 131, which is awesome. If you've not seen that out on the stages this year anywhere, then have a look for that on some entry list next year, and make sure you get out and watch it. Because
which is Matthew's second 131, I think. It's not the same one he's been using.
No, he's had a new one. Yeah, he's had a new one sent. It's been out there for a while now. Actually, I think it got shipped out quite a while ago. His second car, but yeah, good to see those guys leading. But as you've stolen my own business, Tony, as a consummate professional, I always have a backup plan. So a bit of a question for you both, really.
Oh,
we found out this week that the MSA Asphalt Championship is not going to run next year, and for our listeners abroad, we have an Asphalt Championship in the UK here that covers lots of different events on different kind of venues, Epping and Otterburn and places like that, and also the Manx as well, and they've decided not to run the championship next year. So is there anything that you guys think that the championship could do differently in order to survive? And are we going to a direction in this country where, you know, we don't want asphalt championships anymore and we don't want gravel championships? You know, we want a bit more of a mixture, or people want to do single venues and things like that, really? It just seems to be a bit of a sort of a crisis of what to do in terms of if you want to go and do tarmac, what do you go and do?
Jack, can I go first on this one, right?
You can.
Okay. I think we've got too many championships.
Yes, we have got too many championships. You're right there.
So, as sad as this is, we need this kind of thing to happen. It's a bit like when Ancro went. It was sad when Ancro went. Ironically, I do believe there is this place for Ancro at the moment. Although, if you're going to be really cynical, if you look at the mileage, what Ancro was, we've got it. We've got a BRC now. But I think that, I think what you guys have done, and what I mean is by you guys, I mean, MN Jack and the Circuit Racing Championship, is probably took quite a few of those competitors, I think, that perhaps wanted an easier way of going rallying. And, you know, we talked about this the other week, and, you know, we've looked at it long and hard, and, you know, I talked to several people about how the Circuit Racing Championship's going. And, you know, it's an easier way for people to go rallying and enjoy rallying and take, you know, the family and things like that. And, in answer to your question, I'm always a big believer in having mixed surface championships. Funny enough, I had a couple of people talking to me about this last week. I do feel the mindset of a driver is different on gravel as it is on tarmac, and I think night stages and everything else, all the things that, you know, we all wanted for the BRC, which we've now got. So you could argue we have got all these things. So I don't think we need an asphalt standalone championship. I think there's events out there if people want to do them. I think it's very cost effective. You know, Stevie Brown from Questmead over here, he's got this gorgeous, if you're into your micros, folks, he's got an A5 micro, a wide track one, and he's going over and doing the Belgian championship. And you speak to him about the costs of going to do that Belgian championship. It's cheaper than doing the asphalt championship here anyway. So you know, there's places to go and there's adventures to be had, and perhaps this is the way rallying needs to go. Perhaps we do need to start losing things, and maybe, you know, sadly we need to lose some events as well for kind of like this natural cull almost. Ryan Champion, your thoughts?
Yeah, a couple of things I agree with in what you're saying, and maybe a couple I don't. I think you're absolutely right that we've had too many championships over the years. Things have thinned out too much, and like you said, when the Ancro National Championship went, it boosted the BTRDA Championship, which at the time was the third division. But I don't know. I think I am of a view that there should be a strong tarmac championship, because some people purely want to drive on tarmac. Inherently, when you do gravel rallies, it tends to be harder on the car. You know, you do have to, you certainly have to put a lot more effort into keeping the car looking nice after gravel rallies. And some people purely want to drive on tarmac. And, you know, I think if you look at Belgium, it's tarmac. If you look at the French championship, their premier championship is tarmac. The second division championship's gravel. If you look at Germany, it's primarily tarmac, etc. Ireland, obviously, primarily tarmac, but then they have gravel championships as well. So I definitely think that there is a market for a tarmac championship. I think one of the problems we have is keeping it interesting, because we haven't got closed roads, and all those championships we just talked about have closed public roads, and therefore the rallies can vary a little bit from year to year, whereas we rely for the British Tarmac Championship on Otterburn and Epping. It's those two venues. And if they're used twice a year in that championship, it becomes, you know, it becomes very repetitive. And a lot of those people that do that championship have done those stages year on year, and there's only so many variations in there. We see the Manx put into the championship, great, or the Isle of Man, we see an Irish round put in. But like you just said, Tony, I mean, cost is a big thing, and actually going to the Isle of Man is more expensive than going to Belgium when you put ferries into the equation. Going to Ireland is sometimes subsidised, sometimes not. But I think variation is one of the keys. And since we've lost the Jim Clark Rally, obviously a fantastic closed public road tarmac rally on the mainland, I think that's maybe hurt the championship, because it was one of the star events in the championship, and I think getting that variation back in the championship, keeping it interesting, keeping the calendar maybe a little bit more mixed in terms of the event layout, would be what would appeal.
There you go, Jack. Have you got any thoughts on it, or were you just posing the question?
Oh, I was posing the question, but I think you both raised very valid points there. I think there is not necessarily too many events, but there is a lack of sort of diversity and stuff like that, which Ryan has already talked about. So I think you've both raised good points, but I do think there's room for a tarmac championship. I think how it works in terms of where we go and how many events we do in the UK and how many events we do abroad and things like that, I think it definitely needs to be looked at, and hopefully they'll do that over the next year before it comes back, hopefully stronger in 2018.
Folks, let us know your thoughts. If you're UK based and you think I'm talking through my derriere, please let me know. Likewise, if you think Ryan's talking through his derriere, please let me know. And likewise, if you like Jack's bouffant, please let us know. Absolute_rally on Twitter at facebook.com/absoluterally. We are going to go to a break, and then we're going to come back with a man who knows a little bit about tarmac, funnily enough, Rob Duggan.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally, and welcome back. It's not a welcome back really, but it's a man who knows a little bit about tarmac, because he's absolutely rapid on it, and he's so rapid on tarmac, he's also equally rapid on gravel. He is the 2016 DMAC Junior British Rally Champion, Rob Duggan. Welcome to Absolute Rally for the first time.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Well, we've been meaning to get you on for a little while, but we thought we'd let the champagne fizz kind of die away and everything else, and let you settle down and everything else, get rallying out your system. But you're not getting rallying out your system, are you? You're out on Killarney this weekend.
Yeah, after a great year in the BRC, we decided to do our home event and have a bit of fun in a macro race car, kind of a dream come true for us. Going up our home stage, Miles Gap, in a 2.5 Escort, is what we've dreamed about doing since we were 2 or 3 feet high. So definitely looking forward to it, and just a dream come true, really.
Fantastic. Just before we come to Clark, because I'll be honest with you, I've got a bit of a thing for Moles Gap. I get giddy just watching videos from there from yesteryear. I just want to ask you, Jack's got loads of stuff he wants to ask you because he's a nosy so and so like that. But I just wanted to ask you, fantastic year, dominating year for you, Rob.
Yeah.
Was it? We all set out to win, but did you genuinely think you would be so dominant in the British Championship this year?
No, we definitely didn't think so. Heading there, we knew it was going to be a huge fight. None of the other guys were slow, and we just had a very good year. Luck was on our side. From the very first round, we had a very good run up until the puncture, and from then on, it just went from strength to strength. We have put in a lot of work this year, myself and my co-driver, Jar. And all the hard work just paid off, and we definitely, it wasn't from a lack of trying, just we were winning, just we put everything into the whole year from start to finish, and I guess the result just shows the amount of work that we did put into.
Roberto, it's nice to speak to you again. I hope you're doing well and ready for the rally this weekend. It's going to be an interesting one for you, isn't it? Like you said already, it's a bit of a dream come true for you, isn't it? Driving the Escort and on roads that you know particularly well, don't you? But you've not rallied the roads before, have you? It's just a sort of a journey to work every day, isn't it? The roads that you're going to be rallying on.
Yeah, most of them I've got. We have rallied before a couple of times, but the other three stages that have been ran, I wouldn't really know that well. I've driven on them as a young fella just going to friends' houses and stuff, but I wouldn't know them that well. So looking forward to getting back behind the wheel after our misfortune in GB and just making sure that doesn't happen again.
The question everyone's asking, I suppose, is can you do it? Can you win in Killarney? Do you feel like you can go out there and, you know, obviously it's the first time in the car, but you know you've driven Escorts before and you've driven rear wheel drive cars, so are you going there with the expectation of winning this weekend?
Well, I don't expect we're going to win, definitely not. The boys in the 2.5 Escort and the 2 litres, they'd put it up to anyone in the world. The boys are under Ireland, so it's definitely not going to be easy, but look, we're going to give it a good go. We're have very limited time in the car before the rally, so it will be tough to get used to. Probably nearly double the power of what I'm used to all year. It'll be very tough, but look, we're going to give it a go. We're not going there to come second. We're going to hit there for the top spot, and we're just going to go and all out assault on Miles Gap and see where it is at the end of it.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, this year's been probably a dream come true for you, really, hasn't it? And, it's been really successful, as Tony's already talked to you about. But you kind of launched yourself onto the scene this year, really, haven't you? I don't think you'd be upset if I said that you weren't as well known before this year as you've become at the end of the year. But tell us a little bit about your career in terms of when you started and what you sort of got started in rallying doing, really.
Yeah, we started in 2012. We got a mad notion to buy a Honda Civic, and from there, it really just spiraled really, really quickly. We did 2012 in the Civic without modifying it. We upgraded a couple of things in 2013 and became national junior champions after 6 rounds fighting with the best juniors in Ireland. 2014 was probably the worst year of my career. I changed to an Evo and the car just didn't suit and timing didn't suit. We decided at the end of 2014... as we go back a step from an Evo to go forward in my career. We bought an R2 Fiesta, did the carried off Northern Ireland Championship, won that, and got the chance to go to Wales Rally GB at the end of 2015. 2016 started, we didn't really know what we wanted to do. We wanted to move up in cars, but also move up on our experience. We had outside of Ireland there, GB, and I suppose that just landed us on the scene of the Vauxhall. It definitely seemed the best option at the time, and it definitely worked out. And it made the car all year to bring us to 5 wins, 6 podiums, and the junior British title. There's not much more you could ask for in a year. And now we went to GB at the end of this year again with Vauxhall to extend the contract with them, and a great rally for us, but we're going to try and end this year on a high in Killarney and hopefully next year progress and keep going as quick as it did the last couple of years.
I think you said, didn't you, that GB was your first proper major crashing rallying, which is almost an achievement, really, given so long, you know, how long you've been rallying now, and you picked the right place to have the big one, didn't you, at GB? Talk us through what happened.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I'm rallying 4.5 years and I'm lucky enough that I've never had a car in a panel beaters, and I knew from my second rally, the pace we were on, we were having moments, it was going to come, and when it did come, it was going to be big, and I kind of settled with that. I knew it was going to happen. I'm after getting away with it for 4.5 years, so if I can get away with it for another 4.5 now, I'll take that gladly. But, you're going to have off. We were trying pretty hard in GB. We didn't realise that we were 3.5 minutes ahead of everyone else in our class. It wasn't that we were pushing too hard, it just turned into a corner, it didn't turn in, and that's all I can really remember. We were upside down and down the ground again before we knew what was going on, but it really opened my eyes just how good the safety equipment and everything is in the rally cars. It's my first taste of anything, and to hit a tree dead on it over 90 miles an hour and go upside down catfish in the air, it's a pretty big accident, but it was nice to see that the safety stuff does work. And it's well worth putting it on and getting your belts right. It was just an eye-opener for me, really, because you jump into a car without helmets or without belts done right, and I definitely wouldn't be doing it again after the crash.
In terms of, you know, you've moved quite nicely on to next year there, and I know you can't tell us too much yet because you're not quite set in your plans next year, but you know, winning the junior championship has given you a, you know, a subsidised entry into the Drive DMAT trophy, hasn't it? So run us through a little bit of sort of what you're considering at the minute and what you can tell us about what your plans might be for next year.
Well, literally, we don't have any, we have a few things in option, and the DMAC, the junior DMAC in the WRFD is probably our main one at the moment. We're just trying to see, get finalised budgets and spot rounds and dates and stuff for that championship so we can sit down and do up a budget for the whole team and see what the story is from there. We're also looking at the European Junior Championship. There's a big announcement to be made about that in the coming weeks, I think. We'll just wait to see what they come out with. So we just want to weigh up all our options before we jump into the DMAC or jump into the Junior Championship. We just have to weigh it all up and make sure we're not making a wrong move, because a wrong move at this time in my career would be kind of, that'll be it at the end of this year if it's wrong. So we're just trying to keep progressing. Like, we won the 2015, we won the Billy Coleman, 2016 British Junior Champion. I want to keep going and get another title under my belt for 2017, if at all possible.
How has it been, Rob? Because prior to this year, of course, you bought and you ran your own cars and stuff like that. Are you okay now? Because I've been rallying for years, and I still like to be really hands on. I'm nowhere near as quick as you, so maybe it's easier for me to say this. But are you more comfortable now with the fact that you've worked with teams? So moving forward, perhaps, you know, going to drive for a team, or, you know, you've just mentioned ERC juniors or whatever, you know, maybe arriving there and doing an arriving drive deal or whatever it may be. Are you okay with that? Can you not have to be hands on with the car these days?
Well, I ran my own car for the first two and a half years, and everything I did to it was my own, but it definitely does help with the rallying. That a team runs it. They're more professional. I wouldn't have any training cars, only what I've learned. It's just the peace of mind going to a rally, just you don't have to worry about it. That all you have to do is go, do your recce, the car will be there, the car will be ready to go, and jump in and drive it. It's a worry off your mind, and you can just concentrate more on the notes and getting your rally done instead of worrying about the car. It's definitely a huge help.
Absolutely. Listen, Rob, we wish you the very best of luck. You know what you can do this weekend. Just go out and enjoy it. This is one that you can go and enjoy. There's no pressure on this one. And do me a favour, just make sure that if you are leading, make sure that, you know, you've got three minutes in hand and don't stick it off.
Yeah, it's not as easy as that, but I'll definitely try.
Good, man. Listen, Rob, we really do appreciate your joining us. When you are ready to let the world know what you're up to, please let us know and we'll get you on. And we'll, you know, if we can help you and announce anything or whatever, then give us a shout and we'll get you on, and we'll tell the world what you're going to be up to in 2017, okay?
I will do, and I look forward to talking to you again in the near future.
Thanks a lot. Rob Duggan, 2016 DMAC Junior British Rally Champion. Congratulations again, and thanks for joining us on Absolute Rally.
Thank you.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally, and welcome back to a Canadian rally legend, and I think I can call him that. 8 times Canadian champion, 7 times North American champion, Rally America champion. Just the titles just keep coming, don't they, Antoine?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the introduction. Quite happy to be on your show.
Listen, we wanted to get you on for a while because my co-host and I often talk about he both wore blue and red during his career, a bit like yourself. But before we get to the Subaru Mitsubishi days, the Hyundai where you started, not necessarily where you started, but the John Buffum car, which was the open class car, which fascinated us. What can you tell us about that car?
Oh, that was a great car. Yeah, I started to work with Buffum in with John in 2002 because I bought one of his ex cars that he had when he was running the Hyundai USA Rally Team program. And I bought a car from somebody else, an old Elantra, one of the first cars he had built. And at some point, you know, me and my friends, because at that time it was pretty amateur what we were doing, we realized quickly that we could not take care of the car properly. So I got in touch with John. And for me at that time, it was a big deal to just call him because he was sort of my hero. I grew up watching him here in North America and during the Group B era. And he was coming to do some Canadian events with the Sport Quattro and things like that. And he was always my favorite driver. So to start working with him was very special. And slowly the collaboration with him got tighter and tighter and bigger and bigger. And at some point I got into... I got to drive in 04 for the first time, one of the latest Hyundais he had built for the American Championship. The same car that Mark Higgin drove, actually. Mark drove in 2002, I believe. So it was a very special car. You know, they started with what was a front-wheel drive car, and they made it a four-wheel drive car. The front of the car was Mitsubishi Evo 5 Group A, I think. And the rear was WRC Subaru from, I think, around 1998 or something like that. And wow. With a proper Hyundai engine that was developed in Korea, because Hyundai were still involved in the World Championship at that time. So at the end, it was a pretty cool car. And it was developed in collaboration with Dom Buckley, I think. Mr. Buckley did one car, and the second car was done in the U.S. by John. So yeah, crazy cars. Good memories with driving these cars, because I drove both of them because John was using more one of them a lot and keeping one in good shape. And at some point, I guess I destroyed one, so we went to the other one. And yeah, very very cool car.
Was that where, because obviously John Buffer is just a legend across the world anyway, or a legend for you guys as well. Is that where he really started to influence your career? Because that kind of went, I guess, from being a customer almost to, suppose, a bit like a mentor, a manager. Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely. It started, like you say, I was maybe at the beginning like more of a customer, but I was young back then, and I think he just took me under his wing. He saw something, I guess, and he really helped me because at that time I was not backed by big sponsors and stuff like that. So he was definitely a big help at that time. And then I was able to get some support from Hyundai Canada, and things just got better and better. And the relationship became like a friendship, and definitely became a mentor, and learned a lot about rallying with him. He never really coach me about how to drive. It's interesting because people think he did that, but he never really did that. It was more the strategy and the approach and the tire choices and settings and how to read the conditions and a bunch of little things. He had so much experience, so it was great to benefit from that.
He's been around your career. Funnily enough, I bumped into him not this year on Wales Rally GB, but last year when David Higgins was over. Well, obviously he was home, but he was driving the Group N car, and John was involved with those guys. So I had a brief chat with John. Very, very down to earth guy. Very, very, a proper rally person, isn't he? At the end of the day, he's a proper rally person. Very, very down to earth. Is he still involved with you guys now? Because obviously we're kind of hopping around times here. Obviously you're now Subaru Canada. Is Subaru USA, is that seen as the enemy almost, or how does it work? Does he still help out?
No, it's not the enemy, but yeah, John works with Vermont Sports Car and Subaru USA now. So for a long time he was running my team, and we were competing in the US against the Subaru USA guys. But Vermont Sports Car is based in the same small town where John is from, and he's been a good friend with Lance Smith for many years. So when I stopped my private program, let's say, right away John started to work with Subaru USA. So basically he's working with them and David right now, but we're still good friends. I live in Canada, but on the south side of Canada, and he's on the north side of the U.S. Let's say it's just an hour and a half drive, and I'm where he lives. So, so I still talk to him, but obviously we don't go to the rallies together. And no, it's not. Subaru USAs are not the enemies. It's just under the same umbrella, you know, under the Subaru Corporation, but two separate entities, and there is a little bit of competition between the two teams. But at the end of the day, we all have the same goals.
Absolutely. We'll talk more about that, because Robbie Durant, who was on the show, is a friend of mine. Obviously, he's sitting with Travis this year and next year, by the looks of things as well. Great for Robbie, but obviously they were on Tall Pines with you. I want to talk to you about that in a second, but I just want to come back to when you made the decision to go the Mitsubishi route, when obviously the Hyundai thing started to, you know, you made the jump from I think it was around 2007, 2008 over to the Mitsubishi. Was that a very conscious thing to do, bearing in mind that Subaru were already really, really involved with rally in Canada, and you kind of opted to go to the red corner, as it were, because you thought that would be a better way to go for you at that point, because there'd be a competition?
Well, at that point, yeah, the Hyundai deal was falling apart slowly, and to be honest, the cars were starting to be outdated, and Subaru already had their factory team, and there was no place for me there. And I basically got an offer from Mitsubishi, who had some sort of a contingency program to help privateers that were running cars. But they came to me and, you know, they said, why don't we try to do something? So they approached me, and it was just the right timing. And they were a big help. It was never a factory team. It was my own team, but with their support. I needed to have other sponsors. That's what we did. I was able to find some very good partners over these years. And I gave the project to John, because I was working with John at that time, and I gave him the project to build an Evo 10. And at that time, there was only Evo 10 Group N in the world, and it was a big task to develop an open class car and to find some proper Group A or open class car parts for that vehicle. But John did a fantastic job, and we had a great success. And those were very good years, but they were not always easy, because, like I said, it was a private effort, and always chasing sponsorship and dealing with everything. You know, basically it was me, my co-driver, John, and two mechanics, and we did everything. Just five people went across the country, both in Canada and the U.S., battling against big factory team and often having good success. So at that time, it just seemed to be the right decision, and I have no regrets.
I was about to say, because it's probably over the last 20 years, the kind of the red and blue across the world, the Subaru and the Mitsubishi battle has kind of been such a big part, certainly at the national scene, and, you know, obviously it happened at world championship level as well, but certainly at national scene, it's been so important over the years, and I guess now you wear the blue, you've got to be loyal to the blue. But it's a little bit sadder, perhaps, that we don't still have the red, both in Canada and both in the USA, to give you guys, you know, a tougher battle as well.
Yeah, definitely. It would be nice to have any manufacturer, actually. It would be nice to have more manufacturer involved in any national championships and have good battle. But at the end of the day, I think Subaru, they've always been one of the greatest manufacturers in rallying, such a heritage, and they're doing a great job. And here in North America, two really good teams, and I'm really happy to work with them, and I'm proud to work with them. And I've known these guys for a long time, competing against them, and to join them at the beginning of 2015 was really nice, and it's been going very well so far. So hopefully it keeps going for a long time.
How was that, of course, because the team's Rocket Racing, it's obviously headed up by Pat Richard, and of course you and Pat went toe-to-toe many, many times. And how was it going then to drive for the team that you'd fought against for so many years?
Well, for sure, I had some very good battles with Pat for so many. He's directly linked to my career here in Canada for people following what's happening here. And we've been rival for many years, but there was always a good respect, a mutual respect between the two of us. And when he got sick and he could not drive anymore. They went a little bit with Martin Rowe to finish the 2014 season, and it was very nice to battle against Martin too, but it happened that we were in a very good year, very strong year, where we won all the rallies, and I guess at that time it was the fifth time in a row I was winning the championship. So, you know, and I was still a friend with a lot of people at Subaru, and at some point I got a call, and we all met, and I ended up there. And so far, I think everybody's happy, and the relationship with Rocket Rally and Pat is really good, and I really enjoy that.
Obviously, you've dominated Canadian rallying. You've won American titles as well. Did you ever come close, and is it still perhaps even on the radar now that you looked a little bit further afield? Was there, because Pat came over, of course, and did the one make Peugeots over here in the UK, and I was doing another one make championship that ran alongside. So I remember Pat coming over to the UK. Did you ever come close to coming over to Europe, and perhaps sampling rallying over, you know, over here as well?
Yeah, I would have. I would still love to do it. And I tried in a previous year when I was backed by Rockstar Energy Drink. You know, we tried to, there's a few years in a row where I tried to feel the possibility of maybe go there and try to do something with Rockstar in Europe. But at the end of the day, all my sponsors were always happy with what's happening here in North America, and their interests were more here in North America. And I never had the personal money to go. So I had to stick where my sponsors wanted to go, and it didn't happen yet. But I would love to, you know, I've competed against some good driver from Europe and had some very good battle with David. And I remember when Niall McShay came also at some point in the US, and, you know, they've all done very well in Europe, and they always tell me that I could probably do well. You know, world championship is another level, I think, and it would require so much money and so much investment in time to get to a point where you're comfortable in all the events. But certainly to do something at a national level like the British Rally Championship is something I've always looked up. But I don't know, maybe it will never happen. Maybe one day I'll go, I don't know.
Have you? Obviously, we've just had our British Rally Championship. We it took a year out. We come back. We've gone the R5 route. I know you've got your finger on the pulse of rallying across the world. Anyway, what do you make of these R5 cars? Obviously, your car is an open class car, very very different thing. But what do you make of these R5 cars? Is it still mouthwatering for a man that drives an open class car to perhaps, would it be a step down? I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I think maybe in terms of raw power, it could be a little bit a step down, but our car we use in Canada with Subaru Canada is no near like the Vermont sports car car. They have developed they have used the open class rules at the maximum, and they've developed a very fantastic car. I think that is just like the World Rally car. Our car is not quite like that. It's more like, for people in Europe, it would be, think of an R4 that is slightly upgraded with more power and sequential box, maybe a little bit lighter, but it's basically the kind of car we're using. So I think an R5 would be probably even quicker down a stage, maybe not as powerful, but overall it would probably be, if not quicker, as quick. And I think they're great cars. And I did go spectate at the first round of the British Rally Championship this year. We did a little trip, me and my fiance, and obviously I had to stop in Wales before doing anything else. And so we went there, and I really enjoyed spectating and watch these cars, and some good drivers, good competition, and would be nice to try one of these one day.
What stage did you go to? Can you remember?
Maren,
you call it?
Yeah, I think the one with the big windmills, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was snowing, and yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I did the rally. So it was we did it in the night before on the Friday evening, and then we repeated it on the Saturday, it would have been the Saturday or the Sunday it would have been. I've lost track of
time.
Yeah,
anyway, I was there on the second day in the morning, and the previous night we went to see a stage. I don't know where we were, in the middle of nowhere, because I was with Darren Garrod, who co-drives for me this year, and he's from from Wales, and he brought us somewhere in the middle of nowhere where there was no spectator, but it was pretty cool. And so we saw one stage at night and then another stage the next day, and went to the service and just tried to enjoy the area a little bit, and it was really nice.
Because you guys do have proper night stages, well, don't you? We've been fighting to get night stages back on our gravel rallies for the last few years, and that was the first time we'd had one for quite some time. Rallying at night is quite normal for you guys, isn't it?
Yeah, totally normal. I think almost all of our rallies in the championship have night stages. Some have a lot. And like at this time of the year, it's dark pretty early, like at 4:30, it's dark. And the rally we did last weekend was only a one crazy long day event, 200K, a special stage in one day. But we started the day, I think, at 9 in the morning. But when it came dark at 4:30, we still had like almost half of the rally to go. So yeah, we're used to that. Often we'll have the first day that we'll start on Friday at late afternoon, couple of night stages, and the second day will be mostly daylight on the Saturdays. But yeah, we're used to that, and it's pretty cool. I think it's part of rallying that so many rallies were done mostly at night if we look back in the day. And I think it's a shame that for some of the championship or the world championship, there's almost no night stages anymore. I understand the TV and the marketing perspective about that, but for a driver, and the challenge to drive at night is always very special.
Now, you've just mentioned Darren Gerrard, of course, as your co-driver. You've got a bit of a thing for British co-drivers, haven't you? Because Craig Parry's a good mate of mine. I know Craig sat with you a few times. Marshall Clark's been with you as well. Carl Atkinson, Irish guy as well. Is there something about British and Irish co-drivers, Antoine, that the world should know about, or are you just a bit partial to them?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just that when I stopped rallying with my co-driver, my longtime co-driver I had, Natalie, for many years, I ended up needing something quick that was professional enough and that could do the job at that level. And I knew Carl Atkinson from some of the rallies in the U.S., so he came with me once. And after that, because I was good friend with Marshall Clark, long story, when he came over with Niall McShay, and we became friends very quickly and we stayed in touch, and he suggested me Craig Parry, and I became good friend with Craig, and we finished the 2013 season together. We had some good success. And then since then, he came with me, I think, one more time in 2015. And Marshall, it was for fun because we get along so well. We wanted
you didn't to go you didn't go drinking with Marshall, did you?
No, of course no.
I've been drinking with Marshall, and that's a dangerous place to be. That's a very dangerous place to be, is to drink with Marshall Clark.
Believe me, I did, and we had a lot of fun. And so yeah, it's just I think you guys in Europe, obviously rallying is a way bigger thing than for us in North America, although things are getting better and better, and we have a very good championship. We don't have as many good co-drivers available as for you guys. And because I work in English and I do all my notes in English, I tend to prefer to try to find somebody who knows what they're doing instead of start to develop. They all tell me that I'm pretty easy to work with, and I think my notes are detailed, quite a lot of details in my notes, but not complicated. So after a few rallies, normally we find a good rhythm and we're in sync, and things have always been pretty good with all these guys, so quite happy with that.
Yeah, Craig Parry likes to drink as well. I've had a few nights out with him, but we won't talk about the nights out, Antoine. We'll stay away from that.
That's how I choose them. I choose the ones that like to have a party after.
I had a great night when we did the British Rally Championship Awards, when Marshall won it with Keith Cronin. And of course, Keith is a phenomenal driver, but a very quiet man. And we had a very dour awards, it has to be said. And I got up and did a little bit, and unfortunately, John Horton, the late John Horton, who was a fantastic host, came to me at the interval and said, can you do something to liven this up? Because nobody's saying anything. And I went up and did a few bits and pieces and we got a few laughs. And then Marshall just took the roof off the place. And it will always be remembered as Marshall's awards, those British Championship awards. Everybody, whenever you bump into him, it's always the first thing that's mentioned. But there, you go.
He is a character, pretty special guy. But if you're not laughing and you're not having fun when you, you're with that guy, is because you're the problem, not him, for sure.
I like that outlook. Now, we've talked about going backwards and forwards, obviously Canada and the American Championship. What are your thoughts on this new American Championship, obviously, which is now going to visit Canada for its first round? What are your thoughts on that breakaway series and stuff? Does that excite you? Is there some scope for you to maybe get involved in that?
I don't know yet. I think lots of things have happened in the rally in the USA. You know, it's been very hard with Rally America lately, and now they've started a new championship. It looks very exciting, but I think we need to wait and see. Maybe it's too early to say if it's going to be a big success or not, but it seems like it's something fresh, something new, and a new championship where almost all the events followed. And their first round will be the same first round as the Canadian Rally Championship. The first rally is a snow event, full snow and ice event. So everybody that all the big boys that are doing the new American Rally Championship will be here for that first round. So for sure, it's exciting for that first rally. After that, I don't know if we're going to go. It's always a question. You know, I'm going to go where Subaru Canada want us to go. I would love to do more rallies in the U.S. I've done both championships for many years. It was not the case for the last two or three years, but if we have the opportunity to go, of course, I would like to go. And the more rallies we can all be, all the North American teams be at the same events, it will just make it better for everybody and raise the profile of rallying in North America.
What's special, of course, about your snow and ice rallies is there's none of these studded tires, is there? None of the studded tires business.
No. Yeah, now we're allowed since last year, like we're allowed to use what we have here as a street stud. So they're very tiny studs. So they do work a little bit on ice, but it's nothing like we cannot use the proper studs like anywhere else in Europe on snow rallies, like in Sweden or Norway. We can't use that. So it's a different technique. It's much slower. We have special snow tires when there's a lot of snow and it's not just ice. We have some pretty good, decent tires. But when it's full ice, it's basically when it's full ice, very cold, when the conditions are perfect for the real WRC tires, it's a nightmare for us. So, but it's the same for everybody, and it's just something that you get to understand better over the years, and with some experience, you find the balance and try to adjust the cars again very differently than how the cars would be adjusted with the big studs. But and I've always liked these conditions, and I've had some good success on snow and ice, and David Higgins is very good also in these conditions. So he'll be at the first rally, and I look forward to a good battle like we had in the past in the Rally America Championship.
So, which brings us to your. It's what I was really shocked of how tight your close season is, because you've still got a rally, one rally in left in the Canadian Rally Championship, which is in middle of, well, is it next week?
Yeah, I think next
it works
week.
Out
yeah,
date-wise.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so
yeah, it's next week.
One weekend home, and then we're back at it again, which is fantastic, I think.
And then your season starts again in February.
Yeah, correct. So it's pretty tight. There's not a long break, and if you want to think about a little bit of testing in between the two seasons, there's, you know, it's very short break. Normally our break is more in Canada. There's nothing in March, April and May. So that's where we have a big break. But when it all starts again in the summer and then in the fall, it's quite busy, like you're mentioning, from the end of the season and the start of the next season.
Wow. Well, listen, before I let you go, you obviously won Tall Pines. Travis came back, of course. He was kind of getting himself ready for next year. You were still the man to beat there. You had a comfortable win on Tall Pines, has to be said, a couple of minutes there. But good to see Travis back in a rally car.
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. And, you know, I've had some, again, many years ago in the U.S., I had some good battles against Travis. And he's a very good guy. He's a friend and he's a straight up guy, you know, no bullshit. He's always never finds any excuse. And it's very nice to rally against him. And it was great to have him and the Subaru USA team at the Tall Pines rally. But it was a big challenge and we wanted to do well because, yes, they were coming to learn, to develop more as for pace notes. Because in the U.S., they don't have a full recce like we do in Canada. They normally get organizer's notes, Jemba notes, that they can modify in one pass, while we do here a proper two-pass recce like you guys in Europe. So Travis wanted to come with Robbie and try to develop as a duo with their notes. But I also know nobody goes at that level to a rally to finish second. They wanted to do well, and we wanted to do well too. It was not easy because we had to think of the championship and we wanted to take the lead in the championship, but there was also bragging rights to fight about. So, and it just went really well for us. I'm really happy, and it was quite tight for a long time, but slowly we were able to build a lead, and my Subaru Canada car was perfect, no problems, and we just had a great rally. And at the end, it's a great win. But like I said, cool to have him back. Cool to have Robbie back too, that I've known many years ago when he was in the U.S. with Andrew Pinker. And so, two good guys to have at the rally. And there's nothing like competition. It was a very fun event.
Fantastic. Well, listen, you got a 20-point lead. What do we need to do on the last round just to secure yet another Canadian title?
Well, actually, the guy who's second needs to win absolutely if I don't finish. So basically, as right. soon as I finish, I'm okay. Because then I think we would be tied, but I would win with the number of wins. So we'll go there, try to enjoy ourselves, try to not do anything silly. And if we can have a good rally and score good points, that would be the best way to finish it. But for sure, the goal is to win the championship. Now, the big part of the job has been done, so we'll go steady. But anyway, we'll see. We're in a good position. Hopefully it all ends well.
Listen, we wish you the very best of luck. Congratulations also, by the way, on the Canadian Motorsport Hall of Fame.
Yeah, thank you. Something very special, that too. A lot of things are happening, you know, and lately, but quite an honor to have my name alongside crazy racers. You know, it's not just about rallying, it's Formula One and all sorts of motorsports. So, and to have that honor while I'm still active, it's pretty cool. Although it does say that I've been around for a while now, so I'm not getting any younger, but it's great honor and very proud of that.
Fantastic. Listen, Anton Sarge, you've been an absolute star. I really do appreciate your time coming on the podcast this week. And we all from behind the show as well, we wish you the very best of luck on the final round, and we'll keep everything crossed for you for another Canadian rally title.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, and we'll keep listening to your show and keep going with a good job.
Listen, we really, really appreciate it, folks. You know to find us, @Absolute_Rally on Twitter. How do we get hold of you on Twitter these days, Antoine? What's your Twitter handle?
@AntoineLestage. Pretty simple altogether. Same thing on Instagram, and Antoine Lestage Rally with an E, because my first language is French, on Facebook. So you can find me everywhere and loads of stuff up there.
Fantastic. Listen, folks, we appreciate the download, and we'll catch you next week.